mid-mornings on Isle of Wight Radio. The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Welcome back then. Today's Friday Report, the usual mix of subjects, quite a lot to get through actually. I thought we'd kick off today, ladies and gentlemen, with Radical Steps forecast. Isle of Wight Council forced to make further savings. This is one of the big headline stories of the week, and we are being told that the Isle of Wight Council must save £17.38 million in its forthcoming budget to match its spending with government cash being made available. Now, here's the thing. How far can you go before it stops being a cut and it just becomes, you know, putting a pin in a list of things and going, let's get rid of that? Because surely, Julia, I'll come to you first. Councillor Julia Baker-Smith, that is pretty much what you've come to, isn't it? How many more things can you cut before it becomes ridiculous?
Hi, Lucy. Yeah, thank you for having me. Well, I think we've gone beyond what it is we can cut now, and we are now at that stage. It's an incredibly dire situation to be in. 17 and odd million pounds this year, a further 9 million next year. So over this budget period, we're actually looking at saving more like 26 million pounds. Just to give you an idea, if we were to cut all discretionary services, that's all the services that we're not legally obliged to provide, that would save 13 million. So there's another 13 million to find somewhere from statutory services and those things that are discretionary as well, Lucy. You really wouldn't believe that they are discretionary. You would think they are things that a council have to provide. And, you know, it's incredibly hard for us as councillors. That's not why we came in here. But central government have pretty much removed all of our funding and will have removed all of our funding by 2020. It's a really, really desperate situation.
It seems like the umpteenth year in a row that we've been told, well, we're going to make cuts and we're going to take out the stuff that the council doesn't need to provide or you know, stuff that's the luxury, stuff that's the extra. At what point, and I ask this every time a councillor comes in, do you not just say no? It's not like you're a business. They're not going to call in a loan. They're not going to shut you down. You're not going to be closed down by the Inland Revenue tomorrow. At what point do you just say no?
That's a very good question, Lucy. I mean, as you just said, we've already saved £50 million over the last 5 years, and there really is nothing left to cut. If we were to just say no, we would end up with administrators in and being run effectively from the mainland. So saying no isn't really a choice that we have. Trying to minimise the situation for our residents and do the job that we were put here to do is really the best solution.
But if the administrators come in and there really is genuinely nothing left to cut in the budget, as you mentioned there, those figures with the stuff that's statutory and the stuff that you can get away with, if there really is no more in the budget to cut, then surely the administrators are going to go, we can't cut anything. You've got to be providing these services.
I think central government would find things to cut, but I think those things would be incredibly unpalatable to our residents. And that's why we're just really sat between our residents and central government, forming a wall and trying to protect them at the moment.
Like what? Well, sorry, Vix, jump in there.
So surely we're not the only authority that are facing this. The Isle of Wight is not the only council across the country that is facing this.
No, absolutely.
So perhaps, and similar to what Lucy was saying, that you couldn't send in administrators to all the councils across all the country. You know, perhaps the local government association needs to look at this as a whole, as a group. You know, there is much more power in numbers because it isn't just the Isle of Wight, it's across the board.
But Vix, I mean, if you know, just to pick you up on that point there, I mean, we could be looking at councils folding across the country, just throwing their hands up and going, do you know what, we can't cope, maybe regionalisation, and surely that would be a backward step for the Isle of Wight.
Well, we'd lose the accountability, wouldn't we? We'd lose a direct democracy. I mean, we have that kind of threat over us in terms of the devolution that's proposed, although that's on a different sort of level and not looking at all the social care necessarily on that stage. But yeah, I agree.
So go on, Julia. Sorry, I'll let you answer that question there. I mean, you can't send administrators into every council in the country.
Well, interestingly, the leader of Oxford Council recently wrote to the Prime Minister outlining the issues that they're facing in Oxford, in the Prime Minister's own constituency. The letter that they had back from the Prime Minister was actually scary, wasn't it, Vix? You're nodding there. It really didn't demonstrate that he has any idea whatsoever what his cuts are actually doing to real people on the ground and within his own constituency. And if the Prime Minister doesn't understand it, I don't know how the rest of the MPs across the board are going to.
Well, you mentioned there that you know, you had a real fear that things could be cut that would be unpalatable to island residents. In your opinion, what is your fear? What are those things that could go if someone came in to run the council that isn't Isle of Wight Council?
I really wouldn't like to speculate on that, Lucy, because I think there would be probably an element of scaremongering if I did speculate. Over the next month or so, the Isle of Wight Council will be giving out more details as to what exactly is likely to be under threat.
I mean, we're almost running out of adjectives for this: savage and decisive cuts and fundamental cuts. Ian, can I bring you in from a slight business angle here? As somebody who operates sort of across both sectors, really, because, you know, you have community ventures as well. What's your opinion looking in on this? When the council says, you know, we haven't got any more to cut, but we've got to take another 17 million off the budget.
I think it's a difficult thing. And the first thing I was thinking of when I was sitting here was that, you know, we tend to hear an awful lot of figures and it just becomes mind-boggling. And I think after a while we just turn off because it means nothing really, does it? And we're so used to hearing it now after 5 years of, well, we've come in the seventh year now, really, haven't we, of austerity. We've got problems all over the world, as we saw with China this week, kind of in the stock markets. But I suppose what I would like to see as a balance from this is that, you know, maybe we need to look at reporting on what the council is doing to generate revenue. Because I think it's slightly one-sided from where I always sit. Now, when you run a business or you run a housekeeping account or you run a home, you always have income coming in and outgoings. We always talk about saving with the council, the outgoings, but it's also important to generate more income possibly. And I'm just wondering, maybe just as an open question, you know, where's the emphasis or who's doing that piece of work? And maybe, you know, do we need to keep councils and we need to keep local councils. We don't want Oveners coming down, do we? Mm. So, you know, an administration from the mainland wouldn't reflect what us island people wish for. But is there some mechanism that's looking to generate more revenue? And is that piece of work being detracted away from because the whole emphasis is trying to save as opposed to generate?
Julie, do you want to come back on that?
Absolutely. And there's quite often a misunderstanding between revenue and capital, as you know. And we've recently had a significant capital receipt from the sale of the Asda land. And many people are asking, why can't we use that money? Well, of course, capital monies, once it's spent, you can only spend it once. And that's why that money, we're looking at various investment opportunities. Yes. We're looking at various revenue generating opportunities, and we'll be investing that money in a sensible way to bring revenue back in. But of course, that happens over a period of time. It doesn't happen immediately in the next year. So that 20 million isn't necessarily going to bring us 15 million in the next year. It will, you know, we'll can invest it and probably see somewhere around a 6% gain back from it.
Let me jump in here because we've got a phone call on the line. If you'd all like to don your headphones at this stage, let me bring up our caller here. Can I ask who's calling? You're live on the Friday Report. Good afternoon. Hello, who's that? I'm not sure what's going on there. Let's go back to where we were. I mean, it harks on. It kind of sounds like selling off the family silver. You know, Ian's talking about generating money in a business sense, but then we're talking about selling off patches of land, which I'm not sure is what you're getting at.
It's very, very simplistic terms, okay? If we with Ride, what I did was be able to go to the council and say, look, I need some of the preset money to keep the swimming pool open 5 years ago, and I did the same sort of exercise with the ice rink. You know, they've given us money to help us, and as Ride residents, they pay a bit extra, and a bit of that money goes to keeping local things open. Now, I know we can't do that with frontline services necessarily because they're not physical items, but I mean, I pay about £115 a year, I think. Sorry, £115 a month for my council rate. And it'd be nice to have a breakdown of a table saying, well, actually, it's going to cost you an extra £2 to keep, you know, old men in the morning getting out of their bed, shaved and dressed. And I go, all right, I'll do that £2 extra a month. Are you with me? And I
but the problem with that, of course, Ian, is that, you know, your priorities aren't going to be the same as mine or Vix's or Julie's. We're all going to want different things.
But I think that's a very interesting piece of work to do, because that could be done fairly easy on the back of the council rates that go out, your demands. And we could have a very simplistic table of what the costs are and what the cost implications are for all those ratepayers.
We're going to just try and take this call again one more time, just in case there was a problem with the line. Isle of Wight Radio, good afternoon. You're live on the radio.
Oh, good afternoon to you.
Who's that? What's your name? Can I ask your name?
Yeah, my name's Mrs. Smith.
Sorry, go on.
I live in East Cowes. I just wanted to ask, I see that there's movement on the old pavilion, East Cowes. I just wondered if I can find out a little bit more information of when it's going to be open, what's going to be there.
Julia is your lady to talk about that. We will return to that point, Mrs. Smith. If you keep listening, we'll make sure Julia gets a chance to tell you all about that before the end of the show, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Brilliant.
Thank you
for your question today. We will return to that very subject, because Julia Baker-Smith is exactly the right person to ask. So we'll make sure we get there before 2 o'clock. We're talking budget in the interim, though. Vic Slouthian.
I was going to follow on for what Ian's talking about, wanting to pay a little bit extra. I mean, the council tax, the actual revenue that the council gets from council tax is only 20%. I was looking on the report, it's only 20% of the actual money that it receives. 80% of the money that the council here receives is from discretionary grants and funding, largely from national government. It's the national government cuts that are affecting people. You know, really, we should be looking to our MP to say, what are you doing to support the council and to support residents and support your constituents? Because it sounds like we're looking at almost a crisis situation in terms of funding if cutting the non-statutory is not even going to affect the cuts. So what are national government going to do to support us?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Vix. You're completely right. I mean, by looking at a 4% council tax increase, we'll still only bring in an extra £1.5 million in revenue. You know, it's just a fraction, a drop in the ocean, as it were. So yeah, absolutely, the MP does need to be standing up for our corner, which at the moment it just doesn't feel like we have that representation.
That could be one of a whole range of measures of generating extra revenue. And I think what I was trying to also say, that would also bridge over the problems we have between residents and council, because there's always a propensity in this island, isn't there? And I'm sure it is in other counties as well, to blame the council for everything that's going wrong. Well, if you take some ownership and actually say, well, I've paid for this, I know where that's going, it gives people much more clarity. I think what I was saying was that, you know, we have to start also balancing out generating extra revenue, and that may need the council to remould itself and rethink about what it's providing and charge for that service. Because I would come back to your point, if we're going to rely on 70% from government, can you tell me then in other counties that they've been able to get that 70% from what you were saying earlier? That isn't going to happen.
I think that comes down to the business rates base as well. We have a very low business rate base on the island. So where other authorities, not all, in fact not most, but other authorities are able to support themselves through their business rate base, and that's what the government are expecting people to do over the next 3 or 4 years, the Isle of Wight does have a low base, and we do currently receive a top-up grant, which we'll be using, which is part of the reason for the devolution deal that we're going through, because that will see a regional sharing, as it were, of the business rate base.
A low base because there aren't enough businesses, or because people like Ian aren't paying enough?
A low base because just that natural barrier that we have of the Solent does tend to deter businesses from coming over here. We've got a meeting with the HCA later this month to that they hold an awful lot of previously government-owned land on the Isle of Wight. And one of the issues that we have is are they really doing a good enough job in attracting business to the island and putting the right value on that land? So that's something that we're working closely with the HCA on to try and improve and attract more business to the island and improve that base.
That devolution discussion continuing yesterday, Jonathan Bacon was up at Westminster. I mean... I know it's all sort of consultative at the moment, but what's the ETA there? When are we sort of going to see the next step forward?
I mean, the steps are moving forward all the time. I couldn't say exactly what the timeline is at this moment in time. But yes, Jonathan was up in Westminster yesterday, and he was very much making our case for being a special circumstance, because our funding just simply isn't there, and he went up to ask government for more money.
All right, two more questions before we move on to a different issue. One from Jordan Searle, who has tweeted us today. The Isle of Wight Council should cut the Islander card scheme. It's being abused, costing a fortune. We should be looking at alternatives.
Well, I mean, we've got a consultation process going on at the moment. People can actually go online and use the calculator tool there. It's called the You Choose tool, and anything that people feel ought to be taken out, put into different areas, absolutely, we're willing to hear those suggestions. And also, if there's anything that people don't feel that tool allows them to say, then I would encourage them to get in touch with their local councillors to feed back any ideas that they've got. And Ian, again, you know, we would really encourage business and the business brains on the island to be assisting us here and giving us any ideas that you've got, because, you know, we have cut back office services, and that does mean now we have a very low number of officers within County Hall to undertake this work. So we're now in a catch-22 situation where we don't have the people to be doing the work to generate the revenue. So any help that we can get from business is very welcome.
Are you doing enough, Ian? You're involved with the Chamber of Commerce. What's your position there?
Well, my position is general manager. I mean, we do as much as we can. And I hear what you're saying. I mean, we would always encourage, you know, inward investment, and we would always encourage more businesses to come here. We have a fantastic island. It's a great place to have a business. You know, I would shout that from the highest rafters I could do, because, you know, if you come here and you work and you live here, it's a great place to have your family. It's a great place to be able to abseil and to do some sailing and a whole range of other things. So, you know, it's a great place to do business. And I'm encouraged to hear that you said if we can free up some extra space, we can, you know, maybe attract some bigger businesses, and again, they can pay some decent salaries, people then can get mortgages and pay more rates. And I think that's the sort of things I want to be able to do as an islander internally, rather than always go cap in hand to the government, because the minute they decide to stop that money, you know, we're bereft of money, aren't we? And I think we're an island. We're very important, and I think we're very unique. And I think I'd rather we do it ourselves somehow. And I know that's a very sweeping statement, but if we have to keep going cap in hand to the government, at any one point they can go, that's gone, and we're left. But if we've got that inward investment through, we've got some good companies, and we have some fantastic companies on the island equally that we are encouraging to grow and helping with manufacturing and a whole range of other stuff. But if we can bring additional businesses here that can pay commercial rates and employ people, for me, it starts, not, you know, we start nibbling away, don't we, at that 70% reliance on government.
It's easier to be in the opposition, isn't it, than to be in the power and answering these questions. And we've got a tweet here. Do people pay to use the internet in libraries? Should they pay to use library internet, for example?
I think that's an interesting question, Lucy. I mean, obviously there are people that genuinely can't afford to do so, and, you know, maybe there could be a way of testing that. I don't know, but again, that's another suggestion that definitely should be coming forward through the consultation. We need to be looking at every single angle and turning over every stone. I wouldn't want to see people that couldn't afford to use the internet and use libraries having to pay. I think that would be a very, very dire situation.
Is this the council, Councillor Julia Baker-Smith, that's going to lose control of the Isle of Wight? Are we still going to have control of this by the time the next election comes around? Is that the legacy?
We're not going to lose control of the Isle of Wight. I'm going to stick my neck out there at this moment in time. I I can't see us losing control of the Isle of Wight. I think we need to be pulling our belts in more than we ever have before. I think there's going to be some very, very difficult decisions to make. I have high hopes for the devolution deal, which is obviously under negotiation at the moment. So I hope not, Lucy. I really do.
All right. I think it's time to move on. Thank you very much for your comments and questions thus far. You can text us, IW, a space in your message, send it into 81222 or give us a call, 822002, as Mrs. Smith did. We're going to talk about the flooding situation, but I think we'll pick up on Mrs. Smith's point just quickly. The Pavilion Project in East Cowes, it was great. It was running a great community facility. It was threatened with closure. It got saved, but then it closed again. Just tell us what's happening with that.
So nice to be able to talk about something positive, Lucy, after those budget discussions. Yeah, really great news in East Cowes. There's been a number of people working very, very hard. Jane from Community Spirited, alongside Community Action Isle of Wight, have been working on this project for well over a year now, and it's due to reopen to the community at the end of this month. It's going to be a whole community project, so available to older people. There's going to be an internet cafe there, so people can come in that don't have access to the internet and access services, and drawing various youth and community groups in as well. So really, really positive and very exciting. And I hope to get something on the guide later this month when we have an exact date to let you know about the opening.
If you don't know the Pavilion Project, by the way, it's the little green building on the recreation ground there, just off Victoria Grove, isn't it? So you'll know it even if you don't know what it's there for. Let's take a call here. Good afternoon. Welcome to Isle of Wight Radio's Friday Report. Who's on the line?
Carl Feeney.
Hello there. What's your question today?
Well, hello to Julia and hello to Ian.
And Vic's loud in here as well.
Hi, Carl.
Oh, hi. Oh, hello. I'm just listening, and Julia mentioned there's the barrier of the Solent, which does stop a lot of businesses from wanting to come to the island. And I'm just wondering what Ian Jenkins feels, if that's a genuine concern or not for him.
All right, thank you for your question, Cole. We'll put that to Ian. Thank you very much indeed. Ian, is it a genuine concern? Is it a barrier to business here?
Thanks, Cole, for that one. That's a nice one to land in my lap. If I'm speaking from a very personal point of view, I think there's the jury's out with me. And I think there's a lot of good businesses here. I think we have a lot of good businesses working here and working with the piece of water. So I don't particularly buy into the full argument that's an issue. We've got businesses relocating here. We could do with more businesses relocating here. And we touched on that earlier. So I think for me personally, I work in business here. It doesn't become a barrier. But I do hear stories, and stories do say other things. So if I'm sitting on the fence, then that's probably where I am with it.
I mean, do we know proportionally what number of businesses are coming to the Isle of Wight? I moved over here 11 years ago, and the water was a sort of mental barrier for me until I got here. And then you get here and you realise it's all fine. Yeah. It's just like normal life. It's all great and it's lovely and you've got lots of beaches. Do we know, are enough people coming over the water?
We have people. I mean, I had a lady this week wanting to relocate here with an industry, and she's wanting to know about some help with the LEP and other bits and pieces and what we're touching on there. So that isn't an unusual, telephone call for me to take at the chamber. So people do want to come here. And they want to come here for the things I touched on before, I think. It's a great place to do business. It's a fantastic place to do business. And there's so many things that would take me the whole rest of the afternoon to explain to you why here. And we have such a good workforce as well, I think. We've got people that are very committed. And, we've got a good system to work with, even within the council. So, and we all know each other. So, some really good, thriving businesses that do very, very, very well.
Oh, Vix, yeah, jump in here.
I think, though, also we have unique things that we have to play with. We are not astronomical in size. We don't have massive brownfield sites. We can't take on, I know people say, oh, it'd be great if we had a centre parks here. We actually don't have that spare acreage on those big scales for those big projects. You were talking about the business rates earlier. We don't have a West Quay. We're not going to have a West Key. That's not our strengths. There are so many strengths that we have that Ian was talking about, our natural coastline, our great countryside, as well as our people, our history in engineering and technology across the Solent and building things within these land that we have. But we have to play on those strengths. We can't just go chasing this mainland dream that we're going to be like everybody else, because we're not, because we're the Isle of Wight and we're distinct and we have those things going for us.
So that's spot on. I mean, our demographics at the Chamber of Commerce is that, you know, we have 1 to 5 as our main thrust of our business. The demographics is there. We are small and we have a high level of entrepreneurial skill.
What do you mean when you say 1 to 5?
1 to 5 employees. Sorry, I beg your pardon. So we're micro or small businesses. And that's great. That's fantastic. We're talking about people that, you know, start a business, employ somebody else, 2 or 3 more people. And that's our demographics. And we have a high level of entrepreneurial skill set here on the island. And that's where our future lies.
Okay, all right. I think we'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about flooding. And also there's a question on the text from Mark in Ryde about solar panel farms and the amount cropping up on the Isle of Wight. We'll do that next.
Is the Friday Report.
Welcome back to the Friday Report. My name's Lucy Morgan. Joining me in the studio today, Ian Jenkins from Ryde Arena, Ryde Waterside Trust and the Chamber, an ever-growing list. Councillor Julia Baker-Smith from the Isle of Wight Council and Vix Lowtham from the Isle of Wight Green Party. Let's take this text first. What's Vix's stance on the increasing numbers of solar panel farms cropping up on the island? Is there a limit to how much land can be given over to the farms? Could all of our countries side be taken over? Where's the line?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen now, is it? Because there's now been removal of subsidies and support for solar across the board by national government. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that it's going to be a massive increase from now. I think you have to play to your strengths, and the Isle of Wight's big strength in terms of energy generation is solar, because we're one of the sunniest places in the UK, which is great for our beaches, great for our tourists, great for our solar energy.
Great for our businesses.
Absolutely, Ian, of course. Yeah.
not so great, though, if the tourists can't go for a nice walk over the downs without
Most of our solar farms are in areas where you don't see them. I know there's a really obvious one as you're going through towards Arrowton that everybody sees when they're driving to and from work, but a lot of them, you don't see them. They've been strategically placed in those areas because of that. I know there was concern about land use and whether that's taken over, you know, use for agricultural land and damaging to wildlife habitats. But there are also plus points in terms of what grows around those solar panels and is allowed to grow for, you know, many years without being disturbed. So it is a case of ways and checks and balances. But I wouldn't be concerned that we're going to have any further growth much beyond this, because the subsidies have been cut for solar.
I remember speaking some years ago now, admittedly, to a solar expert at University of Southampton, and he surprised me by saying, do you know what, I don't agree with solar farms. I think we should be putting solar panels on the roofs of council buildings. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be on, you know, whether it's a brownfield site or not, they shouldn't be in the middle of fields.
Absolutely. There is those places in Europe where they are banning you from putting solar panels on fields which have a particular grade of agricultural provision. You know, you could put them on, you know, old quarrying sites, for instance, which have been, you know, of no agricultural use. But yes, we do need to consider about where our food is grown, getting local produce. And if that land is covered with solar panels, then that is detrimental to the people that are living in that locality.
Ian Jenkins, you're getting a new roof on Ryde Arena. Why can't we have some solar panels on Ryde Arena?
I looked into it very briefly the last time, and it was to do with the sand and water and the sea location, to do with the erosion that was a problem, but I would love to have them. And we were actually looking at ones in Germany that were didn't even look like solar panels. They looked like integrated corrugated iron. So I think things will move on, and I think we'll find them a lot more sort of easy. They'll become invisible.
Solar glass, and you can get
solar tiles now, I believe, for your roofs that actually are tiling. So, you know, things will work. But I would love to have them.
It's interesting you say that, actually, Ian, because we actually have a business on the island that produces virtually invisible. It's solar and heat source roofs.
Yes.
So, really, really interesting technology, and technology that's being developed here on the island. So.
And technology that will arrive on top of County Hall anytime soon?
Well, I was in a meeting this morning looking at the various options that that we could use for various renewables on council buildings. So yes, absolutely, we're moving in that direction, and that is another source of revenue that we're looking at, because obviously where you're producing electricity and selling back to the grid, there's a revenue source.
A case of watch this space. In a similar vein, yes, exactly. Very, I like what you did there. On a similar vein, we've seen so much flooding, and it admittedly hasn't touched the Isle of Wight this time round in the same way that we've seen in Yorkshire and Aberdeen currently today. But it begs the question, at what point do you say, do you know what, the climate's changing, we're going to see a bit more of this, the jet stream's in the wrong place, you can't stop the flooding. There's a particular field, actually, Julia, I'm sure will know, as you drive out of East Cowes, you go through Whippingham, there's a field earmarked for an industrial estate. It's had nothing on it for about 2-3 years. But what it has had is a very, very large flood puddle. And you drive past that and think, do you know what, if I was an investor, I'd be thinking twice about that particular site, because that just looks like it's going to flood all the time. At what point do we go, do you know what, things are going to flood, we have to build differently? Where do we draw the line? Where do we stop trying to put in the flood barriers, trying to fight nature, and just say we need to just rethink things?
It's not just that you have to build differently, you've got to use your land differently. You could see that in the floods that have happened over Christmas. And we're talking, there's a huge human cost to that. People's businesses, people's houses are underwater. But it's a huge economic cost to flooding. I think the flooding that's happening over December, January is going to cost our economy £5 to £10 billion. All for the matter of some flood defences. I think the government wanted to spend, you know, £2 billion in the next sort of 5 years on flood defences. But those floods could be happening again and again and again. And you need to look back at the source of the flooding, which is climate change, but also back to the source of flooding, which is the land use, you know, actually growing things that are going to absorb and delay the rain so that it doesn't come in some huge flood. I mean, on the island, we're not going to see anything on that scale. I mean, that we're seeing, because those are huge, huge rivers. Our rivers are much, much smaller. So I wouldn't want people to be concerned that they're going to see flooding on that huge scale. But climate change is definitely going to affect us here.
And terracing. When I lived in New Zealand, they used to have terracing further up the field, you know, where the source of the river was. You'd have a terracing situation going on, which would slow it all down completely. Yeah.
It's all soft engineering that we need to improve more. Yeah. It's cheaper and it's effective. And it looks much better than having huge concrete things that are built and had huge sort of drains and walls and things like that.
And again, there's been a huge irony, hasn't there, Vix, in central government subsidies to farmers to actually remove trees from their farmland. And we know that, you know, a fully grown mature oak tree can absorb, I think it's something like 600 gallons of water or something ridiculous. It's a huge amount with its root system and what have you. So we need to be looking at getting trees back in and ensuring that we've got natural defences there.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Your comments, as always, IW a space on your message. Send it into 81222 on the text. On Twitter, hashtag Friday Report, and we are at iWhite Radio this afternoon here until 2 o'clock. I need to talk about Brickfields, as that's been making the headlines this week. Haulage firm Reynolds and Reed have been granted permission to move into the former Brickfields site in Binstead. They appealed a decision by the planning committee, and the inspectorate has now overturned that. In a statement, Brickfields' new owners, Reynolds and Reed, said, well, we finally got there. It was mainly the Newnham Road residents that opposed it. I'm hoping that once they see when we're there and running properly, it won't be a problem, which I'm sure it won't, judging by the volume of traffic that Brickfields used to generate in its heyday. Julia, your reaction to this being overturned by the planning inspectorate?
Yes, well, there was huge concern from local residents and from the local members there. I just met with Councillor Warlow from Binstead yesterday to discuss whether there were any further options. But the council have obviously had their decision overturned by the inspectorate. So it's very much been taken out of our hands now. But, you know, obviously, on the one hand, it's good news for business. On the other hand, it's concerning for residents. So I think really now it will be a case of working with Reynolds and Reed and encouraging them to work with Island Roads to ensure they use the best routes to the site that cause the least disruption to residents.
Vic, you're nodding there. Do you want to comment on this?
I was nodding when Julia's saying good for business, actually. They're an island business. I've used them many times. They're a good business. So as much as I'm concerned about huge lorries, you know, and obviously with the Green Party hat on, that is concerning, but that's the situation that we're in. And I'd far rather a local business that's going to put money back into the local community was in somewhere like that than a business which is, well, we have other places that you've mentioned, you know, where the money is going off onto the mainland. So yeah, it is a concern. It is a concern in more traffic on our road. And it's a concern from a democratic point of view that, you know, is this what's going to happen with our planning? We're going to turn around and say no, and then central government turn around and say, well, yes, you've got to take it. That's a concern. But from a local business point of view, it's a plus.
Does it frustrate you, Julia, that, I mean, you sit there as head of planning, your committee makes a decision, that decision then gets appealed, and someone sat there at Westminster can then say, well, do you know what, we're going to overturn that?
We are very aware as a committee and as an authority that we have to ensure that we're making sensible decisions, and sometimes that does mean making difficult decisions because of central government policies that are imposed upon us. But when we do, you know, feel truly strongly about something, and when we've had so many representations from residents, you know, we do try and put forward decisions that can be upheld. But obviously in this case that wasn't possible.
Okay, let's touch on Wootton Bridge, if we may. That's been another big story of the week, and lots of controversy. Certainly, if you read the amount of shares and comments and things that this particular story got on our Facebook page about the look of the new wall. If you haven't seen it, and I drove through it last night and it was dark, someone in the building described it as it looks a bit like Lego. Someone's kind of put it together and gone, that'll do. And you can't see the creek anymore, which is, you know, a great view of the Isle of Wight. What are your thoughts on the Wootton Wall? Have you seen it?
I'd like to start, Lucy, by dispelling a myth or rumour that's out there at the moment. One, that it's built with Lego. Definitely not Lego. Secondly, that it's another terrible decision by the awful planning department at the Isle of Wight Council. It didn't require planning permission. Had it been a listed monument, which I have checked and double checked, it isn't a listed monument, then yes, it would have done. So Island Roads, from my understanding, have very much gone to the technical specifications which are now needed for a modern bridge. Obviously, the bridge was collapsing, and there are a certain safety specifications that have to be in place in case, you know, the worst happens and a car happens to hit that wall at speed. You know, it's I personally don't like the look of the new wall. I know that the executive member is looking at whether there can be any improvements made to that.
And a meeting is due, I think, between Councillor Phil Jordan and Island Roads, yeah, who was saying yesterday.
Would that improve the...
Well, I just, you know, I know that they have certain specifications. It has to be a certain thickness in case a car goes into it, very much like a crash barrier in the centre of a motorway. And, you know, if I did hit it with my children in the car, I'd like to know that I wasn't going to end up in the creek.
Questions, yeah. Maybe though, about the choice of the bricks and so on, and pictures of Skip with all the old bricks in it, which residents are saying were crushed. In my brain, I'm thinking salvage and how much money was in the Skip. Questions
I know,
to be asked there.
I know people say that it's just a bridge, and we need to be thinking about safety, and absolutely, Island Roads have done that sort of job. They did say they're going to be sympathetic, though. And I don't think we necessarily say that Lego would be sympathetic. But I know it's just a bridge, but there is a whole community named after that bridge. You know, Wootton Bridge is named after that bridge. And it means so much more than a practical thing. It's a whole identity for an area. And to have that taken away from you and have you represented by a different sort of bridge, you know, built in a different way without any seeming consultation, I can understand really why residents are upset.
Ian, I can ask you about this, but we've only got 1 minute okay. left. So yeah. What I might ask you about is how's the work on Ryde Arena going?
Yeah,
when's it going to open?
Off. We start on the 4th of May. Weather dependent, we're really hoping to get it done at ASAP. I can't really be drawn into timescales, but I would love to be able to get it done in the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks. The insurance guys are pressing hard with the the builder there, the roofer. So they're really driving it through because they're obviously paying us for loss of income and they want to see the roof done as soon as possible. And we're endeavouring to get the side of the arena open so we can get the ice hockey back on speed as soon as possible.
You kind of answered my next question there. I mean, are you suffering from that loss of income? Are we going to see you worrying about the future after this?
I have no worry marks at all with me. I've got a very clear complexion. No, when I took the place over with my financial advisor head on, I put belt and braces insurance on there. We have loss of income built into the insurance policy and they're coming to the table and paying us very handsomely for the loss of income. So, you know, that is nice to report. So the roof will be done. Hopefully we'll be able to re-salvage everything we can do inside. Although a lot of it, we're talking about flooding. There's a lot of water damage there, as you can imagine. It's all going to be binned and really started again, which is fantastic from us. So we'll get a new bar and a whole range of other bits and pieces as well. So.
All right, a positive note to finish on this lunchtime, I think. Thank you so much for joining me. First Friday report back of the new year. Ian Jenkins from Ride Arena, Ride Waterside Trust and the Chamber, Councillor Julia Baker-Smith, and from the Isle of Wight Green Party, Vix Lowthian, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
So, another great Friday report. Thank you very much indeed for all your comments, questions, all your tweets. We're back again next week on the show. Ian McKee, Chair of UKIP on the Isle of Wight, and Councillor Paul Fuller among the guests. You can get your comments and questions in advance or indeed during the show. Heather McCallum on your radio next.
Isle of Wight Radio. The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.